Welcome to the European CME Forum podcast. European CME Forum is a not-for-profit organization that promotes multi-channel discussion on matters relating to European and global CME CPD. My name is Eugene Pozniak. I'm the Program Director of European CME Forum. We present the next in the series of webinars from the Good CME Practice Group. The Good CME Practice Group, or GCMEP, is a membership organization for CME providers based in Europe. In today's episode, Celeste Kalanko of Liberum IME is in conversation with group members Reinbert van der Flaut of PeerVoice and Thomas Kleinuder of KWHC. The focus of today's episode is valuing and defining independence when developing CME CPD activities.
Well, good morning or good afternoon to everyone. And thank you for joining the Good CME Practice Group webinar today. I'd like to thank my colleagues who are also members of the Good CME Practice Group today, Thomas Kleinuder and Reinbert van der Flaut, who have joined us to discuss this very important topic on independence. Just a little briefing about the Good CME Practice Group. For those of you who aren't aware, we are a group of like-minded providers of independent accredited education throughout Europe. And I'd like to take a moment before we get started with our discussion to invite anyone who is a continuing medical education provider, be it a specialty society, if you're in academia, if you're an individual that is working in this space, please consider joining us because the membership is not, we happen to be providers. I'm Celeste Kalanko, for those of you who don't know me, and I also am a provider of independent medical education. We happen to be commercial providers, but we do have members from all those other groups, and we invite people to join us as well. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us today. And we have some interesting topics. We had a session, and this actually mirrors the session that we had at the European CME Forum that just took place a few weeks ago in The Hague. And we had some breakout sessions and had some very interesting discussions around independence. So we thought that we would bring this discussion to a larger audience, those who weren't able to attend, and have this discussion with the two of you, with your thoughts on this. Just to let the audience know, we have had quite a few questions that have come up prior during registration, and we'll try to respond to those within our discussion. But at the same time, there is a chat, a question and answer box on your Zoom screen. If you have anything additional, please type it in and we'll try to address it today. And if not, we will look to address it in further installments of our webinar series. So our first question, we worked through this as a case study in workshop sessions, and the question came up was the provider seeks funding, and to clarify, we're all considered providers here. The provider seeks funding from a drug company. The supporter's drug will be mentioned in the educational activity. Is this appropriate? Yes or no? Thomas, let's start. Let's start with Reinbert first.
Okay. Thank you so much, Celeste, for that question. I know this was indeed a very hot topic, right, at our meeting in The Hague.
Yes, it
was. And a lot of different viewpoints on that. So from a provider point of view, you know, any educational activity that we develop, right, it has to be faculty-led, has to be fully transparent and balanced. And so if the faculty who's leading the activity thinks it's beneficial for the learners to learn more about the generic compound, this can be mentioned, but always in balance and always as transparent as possible. What do we mean by that? So they have to also talk about the other compounds that compete with the compound from the supporter in this case. So yes, it can be done, but always fair and balanced, and never mention the brand name, of course. That's a no-go area, I would say.
Okay, yeah. Thomas, did you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I fully agree with Weinberg. The one thing is the transparency that is always needed. And I think all accreditation guidelines has guidance on what transparency means. And the other thing is the balanced educational activity and balance. I think that is a topic that has to be defined as well. And as Weinberg mentioned, no brand names, yes. And when it comes to the substance of a supporter, that's a bit unclear from my understanding in the CME accreditation criteria that mention that it has to be balanced. But what is that? And it should mention the same medications in the same class that are, for example, in the guidelines. But if for a specific indications, there are other medication classes as well, they have to be mentioned as well. In a practical perspective, we feel when it comes to support the speakers and the whole all stakeholders, we have set up a, let's call it, internal interpretation regarding the specific accreditation guideline, and we try to support the experts, for example, giving them really practical examples, like the questions whether there are other medications in the same class, did you mention them? Are there other groups of medications that are appropriate in this setting? Are there flowcharts for the treatment process? And for examples, please take into account that, for example, and that is a fictive number, that the substance of a supporter is not mentioned on more of 30%, for example, of the slides, even if other substances are mentioned. So to give them a rough guidance that is not part of accreditation guideline.
Okay.
So kind of checklist.
Yeah, so basically you have taken it on yourself within your organization to really kind of come up with the guidelines for balance to be able to share with your faculty and with your team, with your employees. So
exactly, as a provider, I think that really helps in daily practice.
Okay, thank you. Great suggestions. So I think, you know, we had that discussion. I think we're all in agreement with that area. Our next question that came up was the provider develops the content and submits it to the supporter for review. What do you think about that, Thomas?
Yeah, that's a controversial question. I'm aware of that. So the short answer is, no content review. The longer answer is that there might be cases where the content has to be reviewed for legal or compliance questions and to make sure that they are covered for the supporters. So short answer, no content review.
Yeah. So, and I think that maybe comes to one of the questions that we came to the audience, because you do a lot of work in Germany. And I think, you know, oftentimes from different countries to country have different types of ideas about what is okay to review from an IME or a CME perspective. And I think Germany is one where there might be some different, might look a little different than what, let's say, some of the other European countries, and certainly what the US would look at. We did get a question that did come in around accreditation of a content that's developed by a pharmaceutical company. And, you know, is that allowed, or how is that able to be done, or should that be done? Do you want to comment on that a little bit? Because I think this ties into the whole review of content.
I think that covers two questions in the same time. The one is the content is developed, and the other thing is, can pharma ask for accreditation. And I'm aware that that is really a point that is causes some controversial discussions between the countries. And in some cases that I'm aware that is possible in Germany. So I would say we have robust guidelines, what the content should be. We talked about transparency, balanced, and so on. So there is guidance how to deal with good CME materials. And they are valid for all stakeholders. Let me give another example, because hospitals can apply for accreditation for their events. Sure, they are physicians. But physicians in private practice who offer services they want to sell because they are paid privately by the patients, they can ask for accreditation as well. And they have to follow the same guidance not to make it a marketing event. So we need good guidance and follow these guidance to stay in scope with what CME expected, what CME should be, and that's not a marketing activity.
Right. So you bring up some good points and probably a good discussion for another day, because you kind of mentioned something that talks about, you know, what is independence versus accreditation, and also what is bias, I think, is another question that comes up frequently. But I think we should table those for the moment, and hopefully maybe we have another discussion on that in the near future. Reinbert, you know, we spent some time on this, but I know you and your organization have some fairly strict policies around this. So the provider develops the content and submits it to the supporter for review. How do you and your group view that and see that?
Yeah, so yeah, you're absolutely right there, Celeste. So we do have kind of strict guidance, I must say. So our point of view there is that for any CME accredited activity, from the moment, you know, that the grant has been supplied, we totally independently indeed develop the activity, right, and submit it for accreditation. And in that case, it's not there's no option for review by the supporter. So in short, the answer indeed is no, because of that strict guidance that we have in that case.
And for transparency, we follow that same, you know, we follow that same guidance and that same guideline ourselves, you know, because, you know, we are a small organization and basically we only do accredited education. So it makes it a simpler for us to just say that that's what we're going to do.
We need to be very clear about that, right? So towards supporters as well.
Yes, exactly. So thank you both for that. Let's move on to our third question. Is the provider asks the supporter for help with learner recruitment. Now, when I was in the breakout session, when we did this at ECF, I have to say this is probably the question that got the most controversy or divergence of responses on this. And to be clear, we had people who were providers from all over, basically all over the world, but both the US and from Europe and from a few other places. So, you know, I think that this was an interesting question. I'm not sure we arrived at one point of agreement, but I'd like to hear your thoughts. Reinbert, we'll start with you on this one. Should the provider ask for supporter for help with learner recruitment? How do you handle that?
Yeah, that's a tricky one, right? And then, well, we could tell also again from the meeting in The Hague that this was a tricky question, I would say. Mm-hmm. So our standpoint here is that we as CME provider, we take care of the entire process, right? From developing the content together with the faculty, to identifying the right audience for the activity and then engaging with that identified audience. So, and we take care of the whole process as IME providers. So in this case, we would not reach out for help with learner recruitment, because we also have, we know our audience and we know exactly who to target for those activities. So we would not seek help in that respect, I would say.
Okay. All right. So you wouldn't go out and ask for them to deliver a flyer or something like that for you. No. Handle that and you manage that all internally. Yep.
Yeah, correct, Celeste. So we manage that whole process, because we everything we do, what we want to do as independently as possible. So also with regard to the recruitment of the audience. And the fact of the matter is that we know our audience so well that we exactly know who to reach out to as well. So
we have
an interest in the activity.
Yeah. Yes. Thomas, what about you? Do you feel the same, or are there some different thoughts there?
I have to admit, I have different thoughts there, because we love to have lots of learners in the events, having the right learners for the right activity. And in a field where a lot of activity, congresses, online events are available, we use different ways to approach the people. The one is having our own database and to approach the learner. The other is use the expert channels or physician journals to advertise events or their newsletters. If you use social media, you always have to make sure that you have the right target audience and only get the physicians into the event. Mm. And then if we have a flyer or material where we know that a supporter, or it could be an event with several supporters, can invite learners as well, we see that as a channel that is possible. But there is a clear firewall when it comes to registration of learners and the follow-up and the activity. That's our part.
Yeah.
But we and use several channels to get the people there.
Yeah. Remember?
I agree there with Thomas. So, of course, when the supporter is willing to reach out themselves to recruit themselves some physicians for an event, that's fine. But we will not do that proactively. So we will not ask them for their help, but they're free to do that. Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah. That should be clear.
And I think this is probably one where the guidelines, certainly from the different accreditation bodies, are not as clear over here in Europe as maybe they are in the US. And I think that's where we had a lot of discussion. It's very clear what types of recruitment or advertising can be done there. I think in Europe, it's not necessarily as clear. I think it's becoming, personally, I think it's becoming clearer, and organizations like members of the Good See Me Practice Group, I think we have probably, can I sum up our ethos is that we promote these independently. We don't rely on the supporter to drive people to our activities, be them live events or be them virtual events. But we wouldn't completely rule out if it's within compliance of a supporter's company to hand out a flyer or something like that. We're able to honor that, but we don't depend on that for our recruitment. Would that be safe to say to summarize it in that respect?
I think that's the right wording. Yeah. We don't depend on them, but they're free to reach out, of course.
Okay. So this wasn't quite as heated as some of the discussions, but I won't say heated, but they were very lively discussions. There were lots of opinions, and I think that's one of the ones where I think that potentially some of the accreditors could help be a little clearer on what what's appropriate and what's not appropriate going forward. So our next question that came up in this case study was, during the event, a representative of the drug company attends the session and corrects the inaccuracy of the speaker. So is that something, how would we handle that? You know, is that allowed? Is it permitted? But what happens, as we all know, sometimes things happen that we're not, that we're not prepared for. So, Thomas, do you want to start with that one?
I have to admit, I cannot say whether it's allowed or not, but I would say whether it's a live meeting in an audience hall or whether it's a virtual meeting, you never can avoid that. And first of all, you never can avoid that someone is standing up and even being a physician saying that the speaker is not white. Mm-hmm. If it's someone from a pharmaceutical company or a competitor's company of the supporter, we cannot know that beforehand when it's, for example, during a Congress meeting. We normally ask the people at live events to introduce themselves with name and institution. In some webinar settings where attendants are anonymous participants and not visible with the name to the participants, we cannot avoid that, but then it's part of the moderator to check that, to be transparent to the audience. So I think it could not be forbidden because pharmaceutical companies have employees that are physicians and that are really experts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Reinbert?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Thomas here as well. So I think we have to distinguish two situations here, right? Mm-hmm. So ACCME accredited events and non-ACC accredited events. So I mm-hmm. think ACCME is quite clear when it comes to a speaker from a pharmaceutical company at a event. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what I know from the guidelines is that from an ACCME point of view, that's not allowed. And then we have the situation, let's say, in rest of the world, right? So mm-hmm. with other accrediting bodies. And there, I totally agree with Thomas. So as long as the speaker makes himself visible fully and also fully clear of what his position is, for what company, and for why this question is being asked, there should be no problem with that, right? So that, but again, transparency is really key here, right? So the one asking the question needs to be fully transparent on their position, the company, indeed, if it's a competing company, Thomas, as you mentioned. So that really needs to be really fully transparent. And then, of course, it's when there's a medical inaccuracy, and that needs to be corrected, right? If that's the case. So that's, in that case, totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was, again, to your point, I think that there was some discussions that, organizations within the states, within the U.S. that mm-hmm. are under ACCME, their employees of supporting companies are very well aware of what they can and cannot do, you know, that they can potentially attend, but they cannot speak or ask a question, that type of thing. It does become a little more vague over here in Europe, but I think that is probably a best practice, is the transparency. It all comes down to transparency, and making sure that we, that people are saying who they are and where they're from, so that the entire audience can make that judgment and decision. So I think that kind of summarizes the differences between the two different the two different continents, we will say. We've got one last scenario here to review. After the event, the drug company supporter requests a list of the learners from the provider. What do you do about that? Reinbert, what do you do about that?
So what do we do with that request, right? So
with that request, yeah,
that's an I think this is a request that happened quite a lot in the old days, right? Can you share, especially from live events, can you share a list of the attendees, the delegates that visited the symposium, for example? Well, these days, with the strict GDPR rules that are in place, especially in Europe, but also becoming more stricter in other parts of the world, right? So it's really, this is in, this is not allowed. So you cannot share the details of the learners of the event. What you can do, of course, is share a percentage, an overview of industry that did visit a symposium, and the other part were then the healthcare professionals, right, that did visit the symposium. So that can be shared, but no further details can be shared from our point of view.
Yeah. Thomas, what about you?
I would give nearly the same answer than the first one. The short answer is no, not possible. GDPR and so on has clear guidance for the CME providers. But I can imagine a special case. For example, there are legal requirements in regard to anti-corruption laws and in regard to reporting of side effects. So we normally inform the learners, for example, during live events, online events, that when they ask a question that is containing a side effect in regard to a supporter's medication, there might be a legal requirement that we move forward this side effect to the supporter. And in this case, it might be the situation that personal data can be given to, for example, a supporter. That is one exceptional example. But when it comes to the list, like we had it here in the question, to follow up and contact them for marketing activities, it's a clear no.
Yeah. And I think to Reinbert, to your point too, we can give information, de-identified information about demographics and that type of thing, but giving out a list, again, to your point, that isn't definitely in the past. And GDPR has really, you know, kind of made that decision in many ways for us, above and beyond even what, you know, the accreditation and accreditation bodies like. We're coming up towards the end of our time here, and I want to thank both of you very much. Before we go, though, I'd like you each to give us one practical takeaway that you think that our audience can glean from this information today that they could use. Thomas, we'll start with you. One practical piece.
Practical piece, I will refer to the first answer. I think as a CME provider, we should go into the process and the specific guidelines where you will apply for accreditation, and then really make a checklist or a process list how to handle transparency, balanced education, and independence in that whole process.
Super. And Reinbert, one practical application.
Yeah, my key takeaway would be, you know, indeed, and this is following indeed, I think the first point that we discussed today, you know, is make sure that your educational activities are really faculty led. That's really key. And the transparency and balance feel of an activity is really important to attract the right audience to the activity and to educate the audience. So I think overall, when you keep that in mind, you will be able to develop the right activity, right? So
super. Thank you both. We've had a couple of questions coming in asking if we will be doing a webinar on the difference between IME and CME. And I think that's become a hot topic. So yes, Eugene, we will take that one back of Good CME Practice Group and put a webinar together on the differences between IME and CME. I want to thank everybody who's joined us today. We are coming up at the top of the hour. This has been an interesting discussion. So thank you very much to everyone. Have a very good day. Thomas, thank you and farewell. Reinbert, thank you and farewell.
Pleasure. Thank you all and see you at the next webinar.
Bye-bye now.
Wonderful.
Bye-bye.
That was GCMEP members Celeste Kalanko in conversation with Reinbert van der Flaut and Thomas Kleinuder in a case-based discussion on valuing and defining independence when developing CME CPD activities. The Good CME Practice Group is a membership organization for CME providers based in Europe that aims to promote professionalism within the European CME provider community. More information can be found on the group's website, gcmep.org. Thank you for listening. And join us for more episodes as we explore all things CME CPD.